580 WILL. I'm Ed Kieser in for Celeste Quinn this afternoon, and we have a very special show today. At least I think it's very special. Being a meteorologist, it's fun for me to talk about meteorology with somebody else. And today we have a lightning expert on. We're calling this our lightning show. And it's an area that I don't have a great deal of expertise on, so that's why we have as our guest today Ron Holley. Ron Holley is a meteorologist at Global Atmospherics Incorporated, and that's located in Tucson, Arizona, and he's an authority on the subject of lightning. The company he works for, Global Atmospherics, is the largest manufacturer and system integrator of lightning detection and location equipment and services in the world. And previous to working there, Ron Holley was employed with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Research Laboratories in a variety of places, including Maryland, Florida, Colorado, and Oklahoma. He's also participated in many field projects in different parts of the world, in Florida, where they get a lot of lightning, also other parts of the U.S., the Caribbean, and West Africa. He holds a bachelor's degree and master's degree in meteorology from Florida State University and has had additional coursework at the University of Miami. And some of the work that Mr. Holley has done, he has analyzed cloud-to-ground lightning data from ground-based detection networks as they relate to radar echoes, rainfall, flash floods, and winter weather, as well as developing lightning climatologies over several years. And he's also worked extensively in meteorological education issues, particularly those relating to lightning safety and the demographics of lightning victims and damages. He has published 50 formally reviewed journal papers and books, book articles, and over 150 informal papers. And I know Mr. Holley was on this station many, many years ago, and I thought it would be great to get him back. So this time I'd like to welcome Ron Holley. Welcome to WILL.
Thank you, Ed. It's good to be back.
And I don't know if you remember, I met you personally many years ago when you were working in Norman, Oklahoma. I was down there for Project Vortex.
Is that where it was? I was trying to remember where that was. It wasn't that many years ago. Yeah, about 5 years ago, probably.
1994. Time just flies along.
I guess.
And as I recall, you told me at that time you're a native of around Fort Wayne, Indiana?
I sure am, and some of my family is still there, yes.
Well, maybe they're tuning in today. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, thank you very much for being with us today. There's a lot to talk about in the field of lightning. I get questions all the time, and a lot of the questions I cannot answer, and I'm sure over the next 45 minutes or so, we can delve into a lot of different areas. But I think one thing we ought to just start right out with, of course, is lightning safety, because whether you're a technical person on lightning or not, everybody has to know a little bit about it. And what are some of the major things you think people should know? If you had just a couple of minutes to say you need to know this about lightning, what should those things be?
Well, I think there's a lot of lack of respect for lightning from a personal point of view. Part of it is that we have all survived a number of events where a storm has been nearby and we've had lightning around, but we've gone ahead and done it and said, well, that was close. Well, actually, I'll be going again at the end of April to the Lightning Strike and Electric Shock Survivors Group, and there's a lot of people there. Every year, unfortunately, there's more people, and those very things that you probably just pushed the schedule or pushed the envelope a little bit on, they do happen, and these people are not in good shape at all. It's really quite difficult to deal with. So the biggest thing is to avoid the threat altogether. That means don't start on a long hike or go out on a lake when the storm is coming. Just simply wait it out, or you'll have some downtime. That unfortunately is a difficult thing to handle any other way. There aren't that many last-minute effective things that are really useful.
Okay, yeah, we'll talk a little bit about that. When you mentioned the lake, I was camping about a year and a half ago in the Boundary Waters area between Minnesota and Canada, and after coming back, I realized I wasn't as afraid of the bears or some of the other things that can happen out there. It's a lightning storm. So maybe as we go through the afternoon and get a little break, we can talk about that. Right now, though, we do have a call on line one, and I want to get to as many questions the listeners have as possible. So
all right.
Why don't we do that? Line one, what's your question?
Hi, I was wondering if your guests might want to talk about ball lightning at all and where it generally is likely to be and what kind of weather conditions can help make ball lightning occur.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hang up and listen to the answer.
Okay, good question. I get that all the time, and I don't know much about ball lightning. So there's one for you, Ron.
Well, we know that it exists. There's always this question, is it for real? I've just talked to so many people, and there have been lots of credible stories that it does exist. Beyond that, yep, there it is. Don't know what it is. We don't know. So things that can say is that it definitely does occur very near or in an active thunderstorm where there is lightning occurring. It doesn't happen any other time. So within a short distance, a mile or less of a storm, maybe 3 miles, and then during the storm when it is right nearby, it often will go down, go into a building or some sort of a semi-confined space. The image I always have of the stories is one of being in a plane or being in a hallway in the house, and all of a sudden this thing just appears and goes rolling down the hallway or the aisle, and then it disappears. That's probably the most common situation, and that's always during a storm.
And because it does that so quickly, you can't really measure it. You don't know when it's coming, so that's why we don't know much about it, I guess.
There are some reputed pictures of it out there, but I think in every case, I don't believe them. Not everybody will ever see this during their lifetime, but I can guarantee you, if you got a picture of it, you happen to have a camera in your hand when this rare event happens for 2 or 3 seconds, I can get you lots of money, but it hasn't happened yet, as far as I can tell.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your call, and I guess now we'll move on to line two. I believe line two is calling from Champaign. Go ahead.
Hi there. I was just calling to ask perhaps for those of us who are outside sometimes during rain and then it starts to lightning. I've heard recently that any time there is lightning, even over the horizon, that perhaps you should go inside. And then I was curious about lightning strikes in the house. Do they ever jump out of the walls and strike things that have capacitors in them? And those were my questions, and I'll just listen. Thank you.
All right. There are two questions there, right?
Yes, two.
The first one is being outside and so on. We had a meeting of, there's only like 15 or 20 people in the country working on this. None of us do it full time on safety and what planning and so on you should do. We did a study a few years ago when I was with NOAA in Oklahoma that found that the average distance from one flash to the next in the same storm, it had to be within 10 miles, the average distance is as much as 6 miles. And so that means that if you hear thunder or you see lightning, especially during the day, you are really at risk already because that next flash could jump as much as 6 miles or more over to where you are. And so we had been trying to play it kind of tight. The old recommendations used to say 2 or 3 miles away, but that's really too close. So we came up with something called the 30-30 rule. The first 30 says that if it's 30 seconds between the time you see the flash and you hear the thunder, then that's 6 miles away, but just think 30 seconds. And at that point, you should already be at a safe place. The other 30 refers to staying after the last lightning or thunder, unfortunately, for 30 minutes. That's an old swimming pool rule, and we find that it doesn't cover everything either, but it covers most of it. Optimally, if people follow the 30-30 rule, I think we would be at that maybe cover 80% of the situations. The other 20% are even more difficult to handle. It's a really perverse phenomenon in some respects, so it doesn't cover everything. The other thing is the situation with a house. If it's hit and the lightning will travel, could do a couple of different things. One is it could just go into the bricks and the heavy parts of the house and just conduct itself and dissipate into the ground. The other part is that more often than not, it will actually conduct through the wiring and the plumbing and the cable and other things, telephone wires, and come into the house. And since wires are made to conduct electricity and water conducts electricity really well, It does all sorts of things in a house. There's virtually anything can happen. The good thing is that these days we have the wiring and plumbing is all grounded, so that the preferred path is eventually for the lightning to go down into the ground, which is very, very dense compared to brick or air or anything else, and hopefully it doesn't do much damage along the way. But that one can't be absolutely protected from that unless you're just staying away from all the outlets and all the wiring and plumbing. You can still get damage. If a house is hit directly, no amount of protection, surge protection, is going to solve the problem. The only absolute safety is to have pulled the plug before the storm comes.
Okay, thank you very much, caller from Champaign, for your questions. And before we get to our next call, I want to remind everybody or let you know what we're doing here. We're talking about lightning. Our guest this afternoon is meteorologist Ron Holley. He works with Global Atmospherics Incorporated in Tucson, Arizona. And we're talking about lightning, and you're invited to call in. I didn't even give the phone numbers at the beginning of the show. Our listeners just happen to know them. The numbers to call, 333-WILL, or toll-free 1-800-222-WILL. 333-WILL, 1-800-222-WILL. And before we get to the next caller, I want to follow up a little bit on the 30-30 rule and lightning safety, mm-hmm. and the fact that your studies show that oftentimes the average next strike is 6 miles away. And, of course, we're talking here about the fact that sound travels at 1,000 feet per second, or it takes about 5 seconds for sound to travel 1 mile, so 30 seconds would be 6 miles. And I recall you writing a paper years ago on something called flash to bang.
Right, right. That's actually what the first 30 is. It's flash to bang isn't something we invented. You're a meteorologist. It's been around a long time. But when you see the flash, you count the seconds until you hear the thunder from that flash. Let's say it's a real simple situation. It isn't always that way. But if you count up to 30, which is a long time, it's 1,001, 1,002, up to 30, that if it's 30 seconds, it's only 6 miles away, and that's enough to be within a typical range of the next flash. Now, thunder can only be heard up to typically around 10 miles in a fairly quiet environment. If you're near a highway or the wind's blowing and it's raining, you probably can't hear it 10 miles away. So 6 miles really is something that's actually fairly distant. The statistics tell us that is actually the beginning of the range of significant danger. And that was pretty surprising to us, and it was also disappointing because it says that the vulnerability or the threat is actually worse than we thought it was. It explains why many of these cases happen when people have sort of done the right thing, but it's worse than that.
So really, if you hear the thunder, it's probably a good time to then take shelter.
At that point, I would say if you're hearing thunder, I was standing next to you, I'd say, you give me a good reason why you aren't going to a safe place. That's kind of the way I phrase it.
Okay, very good. And a little bit later, I'll tell you about another story I have with lightning that may relate to some other people. And even when I was in a safe place, I wasn't doing a safe thing. So we'll talk about some things inside as well.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, though, we'll go back to our phone callers. We have a listener on the toll-free line. This person's calling from Melvin. Good afternoon. What's your question today?
Hi, thanks for the program. I really appreciate the chance to talk to Ron. I'm calling about an unusual experience that I have. It only occurs every few years or so. I listen to WLL on AM, and when a storm is approaching, I've had to build up a static electricity, and it becomes very intense, and then it discharges through the lightning bolt, and it goes away, but it's usually indicative of a lightning strike that's going to happen very close to my home.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered what causes that and why it's so infrequent.
Well, I think I know exactly what it is. When I was working in Florida, we used to have the radio on, and you hear this bzzz, stop,
right.
And it stop, something right. Like that. What's happening is that you're underneath the active charging area of a thunderstorm, and that active area is maybe just mile or a couple miles across. Just think of it maybe as a disk. Up above that is a whole lot of activity going on, mixture of water and ice. In that area, the charge is building up, and things on the ground, such as your radio antenna, especially in a car, you hear it better there. Or sometimes you can see it from towers or trees, or you can feel it with your hair standing on end. You're actually sending a streamer up saying, I'm the one you want to hit. This is a thing that that if you're ready to come down, lightning flash, I'm in the right place in the right time. Then when the lightning does come down somewhere fairly close to you, then that buildup is released, and then it starts up again. That just means that all this mixture of ice and water up in the cloud is doing its job, and it's ready to send one down.
I see.
So you have to be directly underneath one of those areas that's kind of, I think of this disk just sort of floating along with the wind in the atmosphere, a simple way to look at it, and that's the area that's primed and ready to go.
I guess that's why it's so infrequent.
Yeah, you have to be directly underneath that part, and your radio maybe has to be in the right configuration or something like that. I've heard it most often in cars, and that's a sure sign that it's happening overhead and right nearby. You should absolutely not be out with that situation.
Well, thanks so much for answering my question.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Very interesting answer there. I didn't know about that at all. You're listening to The Afternoon Magazine. My name is Ed Kieser, filling in for Celeste Quinn, and our guest this afternoon, lightning expert Ron Holly. And we're talking about lightning. Again, if you have any questions, you can call us at 333-WILL. That's 333. What are the numbers again? 9455. That's right. I just got done doing a fun drive on television. I wanted to say 8812, which is the Channel 12 numbers. So 333-9455 or toll-free 1-800-222-9455. And our next caller, I believe, is from rural St. Joseph on line one. Good afternoon.
Hi, got two questions. One is regarding lightning rods and the other buried phone lines. I live in rural St. Joseph, as Ed said, and the house is surrounded by trees, which are taller than the house itself. Now, when we were renovating the house, we installed new wiring. And when the electricians were here, I said, don't you think it'd be a good idea to put lightning rods on that roof? And the electrician said, no, it won't be necessary because you're surrounded by all these tall trees. So if a strike comes, it's going to hit the trees first. So I was kind of relieved, and I said, oh, boy, I don't have to spend money on that. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
But then the more I thought about it, the more I thought, well, I'm not sure that that's really so valid. So I'd like your opinion of that, electrician's opinion.
That's a really good question, and it's one that's encountered frequently. I'm not a total expert on protecting building, but I have some ideas here that I think would be helpful. One is that we need to think about, as we were mentioning just in the previous caller, when a lightning flash eventually starts to come down toward the ground from the cloud. It starts up around 20 or 25,000 feet up. It comes down toward the ground in 50-yard steps. They're called step leaders. It comes down. It looks for something to hit within 50 yards down and all around it in a sort of a half sphere. And if it doesn't find anything, it goes down another 50 yards. This is all happening in nanoseconds. And if it doesn't find anything, it goes down. And finally, when it gets right close to the ground, only within 30 to 50 yards of the ground, does it decide what it's going to hit. And so in terms of personal safety as well as structural design, you want to think in terms of that lower tip of that flash coming down was there about 30 to 50 yards above the earth, what would it hit in the worst situation? If the trees are right near the house, it may well be that it'll go for the trees. But if that opening is more than 30 or 50 yards in radius, then the house is the most likely thing to be hit in the worst situation where the flash said, I didn't see anything else, I'm just going to come down and hit that house.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the trees are within 30 yards, actually. They're probably within 15 yards at the moment.
It's a fair assumption that it would hit the tree, but I would not absolutely say that it has to because lightning does all sorts of stuff. Part of The issues, which I don't entirely understand, is that when an object is has more metal and more mass, that it's a little bit more likely to be a hit than a tree, which is mainly has a trunk and a few limbs, but the rest of it's fairly diffuse compared to a bricks or concrete blocks or something
right.
like that. It's a judgment call as far as how much is it worth you to protect it. I've heard a figure $600, $700 for a typical house. What a lightning rod does is it doesn't prevent the object from being hit, but it takes the charge and carries it safely and takes it down into the ground.
Yeah.
All you're doing is just you're controlling it, giving it a convenient channel. Mm-hmm. If you were running a small business out of your house with all sorts of computers and electronic equipment, which I have that call quite a bit, I might want to do something about that. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, these days, houses have grounding from the wiring and plumbing and can take a hit fairly well. I was looking at some data from 100 years ago. We found a book from a man in St. Louis and summarized things. And back then, just before 1891, he had the data, and just before wiring and plumbing came in, the houses would be hit. They had no preferred path to go to, and the lightning flew across the living room. They hit people, killed people sitting at the dinner table, sleeping in bed, all over the place because lightning was just flying around in this structure, which often was just resting on wood or blocks off the ground, and it didn't know where to go. Now we don't have houses catching on fire like they did back then. It's quite rare. It does happen, but it's pretty rare.
And who install those lightning rods? Electricians do that?
Yeah. There's usually, if you look in your phone book, in the larger areas, there always will be somebody there. You want to make sure that they're certified. There are some certifications, and they're bonded and licensed and so on. It's not a really complicated thing, but you want to make sure you have the right materials. And the other thing is, when you look at lightning rods after they've been installed, you want to look at them every couple of years and make sure none of the materials have deteriorated. That actually is one of the reasons rods do fail. It may be some, I don't know what it is, in the junction, some putty or something that kind of protects it, and that stuff will just wear away, and then they have nothing at all. So that's part of the reason they got a bad name years ago, was that they weren't maintained. They were there, but they weren't doing a job anymore. There were gaps in the line. So
yeah.
Rods are used very extensively all over the place for hospitals and all sorts of highly critical situations. And they work. They use all the time. They do the job all the time.
Good. Hey, okay, thanks. My second question has to do with buried phone lines. So here we are in the rural area, buried phone lines. And what I'm finding is, even though there's no lightning strikes near the house here, mm-hmm. my modem is being blown out frequently. I mean, I hear anymore. I hear thunder. I unplug the computer just to protect it.
You're going to do both the phone line and the power line.
Well, I'm sorry. I unplugged the modem. Right. I unplugged the phone line.
Oh, okay.
Line. Yeah.
Well, actually, when a storm is not too far away, and you just want to be absolutely safe, you need to pull both plugs.
Well,
so that helps too.
Yeah.
That's the only sure way. It can't affect it if it's not plugged in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now the problem with there's two issues here. One of them is that we're finding that buried electrical wires are amazingly less not performing as well as we hoped they would. There's a test going down in Florida with triggered lightning using little rockets you may have seen in the Discovery Channel and places. And the group from the University of Florida is doing that work, and they find that they have a little test grid of electrical wires and things in the ground, and it's getting down in there and doing things that I can't figure out exactly what the problem is. But burying the cables is good for ice and wind, but it's not doing as good a job for electricity, lightning, as we thought it would. Now, you have one other problem there, and that is your isolation. Typically, when lightning hits in the city, say it's in the middle of a city block and there's 20 houses in that city block, whatever it hits, the power pole or whatever it hits, the electricity is going to go through the wires or the phone line or the cable or whatever it is and be sort of spread out at a lot of places. If you're out in the country and you just have one line coming along the main road, it doesn't have very many places to go. It finds the junction up to your place. Wow, here's a place. I got to get rid of a lot of energy here. So off it goes. Now, the phone company should be providing what sounds like more protection than they're providing to you. That's a policy set by each utility. And there is a trade-off, obviously, for them and for you of what the cost is. If they could make it absolutely safe, but in a rural area, somebody has to pay for it. That can be expensive. The other thing you could do is make sure you put a surge protector on all of your sensitive electronics. You could have your phone line. I believe you can buy surge protectors that have plugs for both phone and power going to your computer.
Well, actually, after the about the fifth modem, I got a UPS that where you plug in the modem line from the telephone as well as the electrical.
Yeah, but it does sound like that the phone company is not doing enough filtering. That is actually a fairly standard thing to do. It's a matter of cost, especially if you're in a co-op. Everybody has to pay for something for this to be done, and they tend to have trade-offs on it. You might want to let them know you're getting a lot more than I think is probably reasonable.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the input.
Thank you very much for your call. And along the lines of telephones, are there any types of telephones that are safe to talk on during a thunderstorm? I know, obviously, if you're talking on a line that's wired to your wall, lightning and the electricity from lightning can come through the line. And what about cell phones? What about portable phones in your house? Are there any dangers talking on those?
No, there's no way for the electricity to come through the space and know that phone sometimes is hanging on the wall. So that's the good thing to have. You don't want to be real close to the wall because you'd have a metal object next to another metal object. But first of all, wired phones are not good. A couple of people are killed in this country every year, and a number of people are injured. It definitely does happen. And the only other thing we've thought of with the mobile phones or portables in the house is just the acoustic shock. If it hits right there, it's going to be a really loud noise. I think we've seen one case of that, but it's not going to be fatal as it is.
A loud noise through the phone?
Yeah, even if you were on a portable phone standing in the middle of your living room and it hit on right there, there's going to be a loud noise coming through, and if it was up against your ear, you're going to get a really loud noise. I think there might be a limit to how loud it could be, and that's an unknown area at this point.
Okay, so cordless phones, much, much better, much safer than wired phones during thunderstorms.
Yes.
Another question I have along those lines, yours truly was struck once through the telephone. I was hanging up a phone and didn't get a direct shock.
Ed.
What's that?
Ed.
I was hanging it up.
Ah.
And this was when I was just 20 years old, so I didn't know what I was doing then. I remember telling you this story when I met you several years ago, and you asked me if I went to the hospital. And I said, no, after a few minutes, I felt fine, and you told me I was lucky, and my heart could have stopped up to a couple of days later. How can that happen, and what happens there, and what should people do if they even get an indirect strike and think they're fine?
Well, you can always you make a quick assessment. What happens to people who are injured or killed by lightning is that the breathing and the heartbeat stop. And it's just a question of how soon it comes back. The heartbeat kind of comes back with its rhythm. It sort of has that little ticking thing going on and eventually comes back, but the breathing doesn't. And if the breathing doesn't come back, it doesn't matter whether the heart's running or not. If you feel that you've had some sort of cardiopulmonary problem, having trouble breathing, or your heartbeat is very excessive, even if you feel slight, I would go in immediately because it's not unusual for lightning victims to have something happen a few hours later, especially with the heart. So I would not take a chance. The problem is that many of the doctors, most of the hospitals you go to, won't know too much about it. The only way that they will be able to identify if you are having a problem is that the electrocardiogram will be very weird or accelerated or something like that. That would be the main sign. So just assess yourself real quickly and you say, I'm having trouble breathing, my heart's going crazy, go to a hospital immediately.
Okay. I didn't quite feel that, but it was a shock for a few minutes. I just turned white as a ghost and looked stunned, I guess, for a few minutes and sat down. Just felt this tingle go from my ear down to my toe. And actually, the phone was not up at the ear, but the force, I guess, that came through, it slammed the phone back up to my ear. I was hanging it up. So your heart can stop later. Is that more of an electrical part with the heart? I know you're not a doctor, but is that more messing up with the electrical side? Because I'm told by heart specialists you have obviously the just the physical pumping of your heart, the mechanical part, and then there's the electrical side.
Yeah, there's I guess this little signal which actually keeps going for a while, even if your heart stops, is an electrical nerve impulse, is a neurological thing. And it may seem all right for a little while, but there's been some damage, and the heart and everything else are trying to overcome it. But then eventually part of the connections are messed up, and it shuts down. It's not unusual for the more severe cases. So I would treat that as a significant event. I've talked to the victims, quite a few victims, and first of all, it's a really lousy experience if you have a severe one. Changes your life. They all say two things: that changed my life forever, and number two is it was for the worse. So can't underestimate how bad it is.
Okay, well, we have our lines full, so I think we'll take some more callers, and right now we'll go to line two. I believe this caller's from Champaign. Thanks for waiting.
Yes. We had a real unusual lightning strike. It came in through the window. My daughter was in bed, and it blasted the glass, and fortunately she had a really high antique headboard that protected her, but she probably had 1,000 pieces of glass on her bed. And the odd thing was, it came in, we have a huge elm tree right outside her window, probably just feet from her window, and that tree was unscathed. And it also it took boards from around the outside of the window and threw them across the room. We had boards that were impaled into the room on the opposite side.
Ooh.
I mean, it was such violence, and yet we didn't have, there was like no, there's no antenna, there's nothing that's metal that sticks up on that end of the house, so it must have come, jumped off the tree or something.
Yeah, so, that sounds like what it did was hit the tree.
My question is, if we should do a lightning rod, and if so, would you put it in the tree or on the house?
Well, I don't know. You can do both. People do put rods in trees to protect the trees, usually more historic or rare ones. The problem there is that the tree is very close to the house, and even though the tree may not be appear to be damaged, it either apparently it didn't actually explode the bark off, which is how a lot of trees react to that, and it shoots them out at what I've told her is supersonic speed. So what most likely happened was it came down, it hit the top of the tree, came down the trunk, and perhaps was spreading out on the branches, and it arced over a few feet to the house. A few feet's not a big problem for lightning to jump. And then it must have been a pretty big portion of the whole thing to do that kind of damage. We've had this question about windows before, and typically the window itself is not a problem unless flying objects, like from trees, come through it. In this case, you had must have been just close enough. Absolute concussive force of the arcing coming over from the tree was enough to tear everything apart. I mean, this is a powerful event, so it doesn't take a whole lot of it to do it. As far as protection goes, we were talking earlier about this idea of having a 30 to 50-yard circle around the lower tip of the lightning. The tree is actually very close to the house, and that's the underlying problem. Yeah, you could put something in the tree that would do the job. It certainly could be done. It's not a very complicated thing.
And then you mentioned that a lightning rod should be checked frequently.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember at one point asking someone about that, and they said that it should probably be checked after every hit.
That would be a very good idea, because who knows what it did along the way. It took the hit one time.
But then if you put it up in a tree, how would you get it checked all the time?
Well, the only place you really need to check it is where usually you have to make a junction or a bend once or twice along the way, as few bends as possible. But it may come down toward the ground. You pound a stake into the ground, a metal pole, and that connection between the wire, which is the rod coming down from the rod, and the pole, there's going to be a connection. It has to be some sort of a loop or whatever. That's where it goes bad. It's where the connections between two different parts of the system are. And there is sort of a putty they put around it, and that stuff dries out or gets frozen or whatever. And when that goes bad, then you don't have a connection. The whole thing's going bad. So, yeah. And the underlying problem there is that the tree was right outside the window. That would be the underlying problem.
Okay.
Most of the time, people don't have a tree very close to a window. And it can happen. All of these things have happened before. That's a pretty rare event, but
yeah,
that's an interesting one. I actually haven't heard one quite like that before.
Well, thank you.
I'm glad no one was hurt, but I'm sure you were very scared, and it's something to...
20 years, is it apt to happen again? Or the
well,
fact...
anything can happen again. So
yeah.
One of the things we have in this country is we have on the order of 25 million cloud-to-ground flashes every year, and I wanted to put this in that Illinois, on the average over the last 6 years with our National Lightning Detection Network, averages about 250,000 cloud-to-ground flashes a year. So there's a lot of lightning out there.
So the old lightning only strikes once is not true.
No, absolutely not. No reason. Each event's a new event. The lightning comes out, wow, look at the street, and it comes out and does it again. So.
Okay, well, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for your call. We're talking with Ron Holley, a lightning expert, meteorologist with Global Atmospherics Incorporated in Tucson, Arizona. Our lines are full, so we'll move right along to line three, and good afternoon. What is
good
your
afternoon.
Question? Go ahead.
Our telephone must not be grounded either, because about a year ago, during a storm, and I never talk on the phone, believe me, especially after this happened, the phone rang. A tremendous clap, and then I saw blue light. I was about 12 feet away from this.
Good thing you weren't on the phone.
That cured me.
Yep.
Now, I did want to tell about a friend of mine who lived in the country. This happened many, many years ago. She was washing dishes at the kitchen sink, and a bolt of lightning came right up through the drain. It knocked her away from the sink, I'll tell you that. Yeah. So I don't do dishes either during a storm.
Well, both of those are actually events that have happened fairly often. There's a woman in Florida who's been injured 3 times by lightning, and one of them, she was just washing the dishes, and the storm was 5 or 10 miles away. I mean, this is what I mean by being sort of a perverse phenomenon. You can't live your life in fear of it all, but you can take the normal and reasonable precautions.
Now, would these storms have anything to do, we have a motion sensor light out in front.
No.
And after a storm, the motion sensor stopped working.
Yeah, it probably entered into the electrical system, too. You have a little bit of, your phone line and power line may well be very close to each other somewhere in the house, and it just jumped over to the power line. Sometimes things
like...
But
you
like,
wouldn't necessarily see any damage to this, right?
Yeah,
just
you may not see
it
much. It'll just fry
anymore.
A little something inside the electronics, and it's gone.
Uh-huh.
VCRs, microwaves, they're all pretty small. And they tend to take hits very badly. It doesn't take much, and they're out. With regard to the phone, it's quite possible that the house was almost directly hit. You normally wouldn't have that kind of explosion from the phone if it was few miles away. It at least has a little chance to dissipate. It may blow up a modem, as the gentleman did earlier, but it shouldn't be doing the blue spark explosion thing unless it hit right there. So
it was not just a spark, it was a light. It was about 6-7 inches in length. I saw the light. This is a wall telephone, by
wow.
the way.
Are you in the country more?
No, or? No, we're in town here.
Well, then you probably had an almost direct hit. And you can do all the precautions you can for something a few miles away, but when the house is hit directly, then it's really tough to do much. Ed, I want to throw one number out here. As I did a study a few years ago, and we found that in the U.S., the homeowners and small businesses, we got a hold of some insurance data, the number of claims for lightning every year in the U.S. is at least 300,000 claims per year, and the average damage is $1,000 each time. So it is very common.
Wow, that is a big number.
That's a big number.
One thing I'm asked about a lot of times, if you get the direct hit, how hot is a lightning bolt? How wide is a lightning bolt? And How much, what's the voltage of a lightning bolt, a typical one?
Well, the temperature is on the order of, just a mere 30 to 50,000 degrees. I actually don't remember whether it's Celsius or Fahrenheit. It doesn't matter, does it? I think it's Celsius. So let's say 50,000 degrees. And the thing itself is only about an inch across. The channel itself is very small. Amazing what it does. And then some numbers that are out there, peak power for a portion of a second is about 10,000 megawatts.
Wow.
The energy is 30 million volts, 30,000 amps. Those are serious numbers, even though it lasts less than a second. Anything that it impacts with that sort of intensity is going to have a problem.
You said 10,000 megawatts.
Yeah.
Wow.
That only lasts a portion of a second. So
not long, but you don't want to be struck by lightning.
That
tells you just a little bit about the power you have there. Okay, I think we maybe lost a call from Bainbridge, Indiana. So I believe the caller on line 4, our toll-free line, is from Charleston. If not, please tell me where you're calling from. Hello,
it is from Charleston. There's always the advice that if you're in an open area and a thunderstorm, don't go stand under a tree. But we live in a house that's surrounded by very tall trees, 70, 80 feet. Does the lightning offer any, do the trees offer really lightning protection for a house that's in that situation?
Absolutely not. Oh, for a person?
No, well, for the house itself, if it's surrounded by tall, literally a forest of tall trees.
Well, we were talking earlier with someone who has a similar situation. The way the lightning, just repeat briefly, the lightning comes down from the cloud, and when it gets very close to the ground, think of it as the lower tip of the channel coming down. The only thing that it knows exists is within 30 to 50 yards of its lower tip. It doesn't go off a half a mile away over to a hill or something like that. It's completely blind. It comes down there and said, whoop, what's within 30 to 50 yards? And that's what it hits. If the trees are more than 30 to 50 yards away, the house, is, from a lightning point of view, is sitting there all by itself. If the trees are fairly close, then it's probably more likely the tree will be a hit. However, there is somewhat of a tendency to go for the more massive object, which would be a house. The tree is, compared to the mass of a house, isn't very much. So that doesn't guarantee it either. If you're really worried, I would put some couple of rods on the house. If you're out somewhat in the open or in the country there, it's best to have some protection. It's a tough trade-off. There is no real hard answer to that, but it's a matter of what you're comfortable with as well as thinking in terms of what the lightning is going to do. But those are the factors involved.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And we're getting close to the end of our time, but I know a person has been waiting a while on line 1 from Bloomington, so we'll go to that caller, and you're on the air.
Thanks very much, Ed. I'd just like to remind anybody who depends upon trees to protect their house, the trees may not always be there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the tree changes its size and shape, and I hadn't thought of that. If you put a rod in a tree to maybe help, that would have to be looked at every few years because it depends on where it was put. The structure of the tree may change enough that it isn't doing the job anymore.
Well, but the trees are living things, and they can die.
Yeah.
And the house will probably last longer than the trees.
Yeah.
So
we estimate that the average situation is that every house in the U.S. east of the Rockies, where there's more storms, is hit by lightning every 100 years. Or turn that around: every 100 out of 100 houses, one is hit every year. So it's not unusual. Interesting number that seems to be kind of coming out of our work.
Well, thank you very much for that call, and unfortunately, we're just about out of time here. I really wish I could get into the camping realm. Just one quick question. We only have a few seconds. If you are out camping and you're on an island And is there any place you can go? Or
no.
Just...
No, you're in a very bad situation.
Okay.
There was a whole family in Georgia was killed on a little island with a lone tree on top of it. Couldn't figure out where they were. They found the whole family of six dead there the next day on this island.
Wow.
So don't be there. I don't have any other solution.
Okay. I'll have to figure
there's
out.
There's no alternative. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, but that's good to know.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate your taking your time to be with us this afternoon. We still have people holding. Unfortunately, we can't get to everybody's call, but that tells us that maybe we'll do this again sometime.
All right. I enjoy doing it very much. These are very good questions, and I don't know all the answers either, and I appreciate your listening.
Well, it's a topic that is of interest for many. Thank you very much. That's Ron Holley, meteorologist and lightning expert, joining us this afternoon on the Afternoon Magazine. It's now 1:52 Central Time, and that means it's time for a look at the markets. And with that, we go to Carrie Moore.
Thank you, Ed, and good afternoon. May wheat for the day had a high of 266 and one quarter, the low 264 and one quarter. It settled at 265, up three quarters for the day. July, the high 277 and one half, the low 275. It settled 276, up one half. September, the high 287 and one quarter, the low 285. It settled 286 and one quarter, up three quarters. December, the high 302 and one quarter, the low $3. It settled $3 and three quarters of a cent, unchanged. March wheat, the high 314 and one half, the low 312 and one half. It settled 313, unchanged. May corn, the high 209 and one half, the low 207. It settled 207 and one quarter, down two. July, the high 218. The high was 217 and one quarter, the low 214 and three quarters. It settled 215, down two and one quarter. September, the high 225, the low 223. It settled at 223, down two and one quarter. November corn, the high 229 and one half, the low 229 and one half. It settled at 229 and one half, down two and one quarter. December, the high 235 and one quarter, the low 233. It settled 233 and one quarter, down two and one quarter. March, the high 244 and one quarter, the low 242 and one quarter. It settled 242 and one half, down two and one quarter. May corn, the high 250 and one half, the low 249 and one quarter. It settled at 249 and one quarter, down two and one quarter. May oats, the high 107 and three quarters, the low 106 and one quarter. It settled at 107, up one half. July oats, the high 111, the low 109 and one half. It settled at 110 and one half, up three quarters for the day. The soybeans for May had a high of 443, the low 436. It settled 436 and